Okay, so I have been talking for 2 minutes on mute. Anyway, this is Holy Macaroni coming at you live, audio style. This is my third and last space of the basics of protecting yourself in crypto for this week. I'm just getting set up here. I know everybody's dealing with Cardano Summit right now. I have still yet to figure out the best time to do these. It's only my second week of doing them. So I'm still trying to feel out the best time. 6 p.m., and then the last time I did an early one, I had a couple few a handful of people join. Each one I've had a couple of people join on average, so that's great to have them in. These are, what the premise here is. I have certain topics I'll talk about. And then if anybody joins and wants to, if they have other questions or they want to talk about, or if they want to help be a part of the conversation, whatever, then, we'll go ahead and do that. I'm going to mute myself for a moment while I reshare this space out. So I'll be right back. Okay, I have shared that from this Epoch Sec account, and then I resent it from Holy Macaroni because I have a lot more followers there. Again, it's Friday morning. Most people are probably in Switzerland right now or taking the day off or something, but I'm still building this project up and trying to get some traction with it. But if the join count or whatever you call it stays low for right now, that will not deter me. I will continue these because I wholeheartedly believe in awareness and spreading the word and talking about these topics. But I have noticed that I've definitely seen while I've only had a couple of people join each one, I think one I had six or seven people, which is awesome. And while that's been low for right now, for one, I'm not much of a marketer, but secondly, I post these on my website at epochsec.io / blog. You'll find that if you go to my web if you go to EpochSec website, you'll see an information feed on there, and that's my blog page. But I If I write an article, like I wrote an article for Basic Linux Security, I posted that yesterday or the day before. Every time I have one of these spaces, I record them and I post them there so you could go pick one and re-listen to it at your own leisure. And I've seen that, right? I've been watching the analytics on that, and they've definitely had plenty of people checking them out. So that's really great. Yeah, we're going to give it. I'll give it since it's 7 after. We'll give it 3 more minutes. So it'd be 10 after, and then I'll go ahead and get started. Okay, it's 10 after. Before I get started, I'm going to pin. If you're listening to this recording, go to, I don't know if pins show up on the recordings, actually, but if you go to Lathesin's Twitter page, you'll see his pinned tweet. These are some of the topics we'll be talking about. So, taking your funds off exchanges, investing in a hardware wallet, SIM locking your phones, storing seed phrases, password managers, two-factor authentication, and I'll probably throw in some other thoughts along the way, as I usually do. So, let me just get the last one. And then, also, if you go to my Twitter page, Holy Macaroni, my pinned tweet is an 8 tweet thread that gives you all of the details about my project, the website information, my plan, goals, all sorts of stuff. So let me get that going. Okay, they are both there. Yeah. What is happening here? Just making sure I'm good to go. Okay. So let's start off. So the general idea here is a list of things that you can do, and they're not all encompassing. There are other things you can do. But The idea here is a list of five or six things to help better improve your safety and security when doing things in crypto, right? So the first week I was on vacation last week, but the first week before that, I talked about some general things to do to just protect yourself in general in traditional, for lack of a better way of putting it, internet activities, right? Going to websites, using social media, joining projects, all sorts of things, right? Some general guidance that I follow myself, as well as I threw in a few tools that could help you on your daily quest of being safe. But yeah, today will be more specific to activities in crypto, around your funds, right, and your wallets and so forth. And then there's a concept that we use in cybersecurity called, it's pretty straightforward, it's layered security. I deal with many, 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 many huge corporate enterprises, and over the years, there's been a common mentality of, all right, let's get this security solution set up, configure it how it needs to be for best practices, and then go move on. We call that set and forget. And that is absolutely the wrong mentality to have, but it's, for enterprises, but it's also not a good mentality you have for users, right? Because the fact of the matter is these threat landscapes are ever evolving by the second, right? There's tons of bad actors out there, and they're continuously nonstop every second of every day looking for new ways to compromise people, systems, teams, so forth, right? Anyway, so that's just a general comment to make there to keep in mind. And the point, I guess the other point to make out of that is, these five or six things are really great. And if you practice them, it will increase your chances of staying safe. But if there are other things that come along the way, always be actively thinking about ways to better improve your safety, right? You might do some of these things we talk about and then realize down the road there are better ways to improve what you're doing, or you may find new tools that are helpful, right? So I would try, it sounds like a hassle, but I would definitely just try to get in the habit of making your own personal security and safety a forefront in your mind. Anyway, let's get to the points that Lothisen made. The first one is taking your funds off of exchanges. We're all freshly and acutely aware of the FTX saga, if you will, a centralized exchange. Just earlier this year, we also probably are still fresh in memory on the Voyager situation, as well as the Celsius situation, or how about Luna? Things like that. Well, that's not an exchange, but anyway. So just remember, these. So the whole thing is when you're putting these funds on those centralized exchanges, we've all heard the phrase "not your keys, not your crypto." Those exchanges have full custody of your funds. And as far as I know, none of them, if not, or at least most of them, probably are not FDIC insured, right? So for the US-based citizens, there's nobody backing them if something does happen. Not that I put my faith in something that is backed by FDIC, because there are a lot of problems that come with that too. Timetables, what you'll, how long it'll take to get your stuff, if you'll get your stuff, what you'll get. I don't know. I've never been in that situation, but nonetheless, if you're using a centralized exchange, it is in their custody. Now, the idea that what the suggestion here is, think about it like a public bathroom. You get in, do your business, get out, go home, right? go about your business, do something else, get out of. You don't hang out in the public bathroom. You don't just stay in there. You don't bring your personal belongings in a stall and, you know, keep everything there. You know, you get in there and do your thing and get out. Just like exchanges. You know, I tell people to have the mentality, you know, have your plan in ahead of time. It sounds like this sounds crazy, right? But it's really not. So, you know, if I'll, so for a basic example, I want to take, I have crypto A in my wallet, but I want to get some crypto B. I'll figure out how much of crypto A I'm moving and how much of crypto B I want. I'll try to plan for an exact time I want to do that. And then that's when I'll move my funds to the exchange, do my business, and then get them back off onto my wallet. Now, Quasar was on with me last night, and he brought up a very valid point, and I agree with this, where, you know, it's also okay to leave some funds, or as the cliche statement goes, you know, leaving dry powder on an exchange for that moment, that unexpected moment where something happens. You're like, okay, now I want to go buy something right now immediately. I want to go exchange something right now immediately. So, you know, the important thing to keep in mind there is, you know, what is your risk tolerance, right? What is your acceptance of risk versus reward? You know, if it's 5% of your portfolio that, you know, if something happened, you lost all of it. You know, it might suck. You know, you're gonna be a little upset about it, but, you know, at the end of the day, you're totally fine. No sweat. Move on. Go forward. Like, if, you know, if I lost a $5 bill, I don't want to lose a $5 bill, but if I do, I'm not, you know, I'm still paying my bills. I'm still gonna eat. Still totally fine. You know, not a big deal at the end, right? So, you know, I know people have talked about that a lot over the years, but, you know, I think it's important just to keep reminding people of those, of that type of mentality to have. Give me just a moment. Okay. Now, along, you know, continuing with the hard or with the wallet discussion, centralized exchanges and their wallets come with their own security risks, like we just talked about, right? Not in your custody. You know, you're relying on them to be secure, to be safe, to forget the term, but to have enough reserves in case something happens, all these things, right? But, you know, your own software wallet, you know, for Cardano, right? Eternal, Nami, Daedalus, etc., or, you know, Ethereum and so forth around MetaMask, the Ergo wallet. I forget the name of it off the top of my head, Titan or something. I'm not sure. Anyway, so all these software wallets, right? They also have their own risk, right? And it's not that the wallet itself is insecure, it's the fact that it's a piece of software. All software out there, there's no piece of software out there foolproof, from bad actors, right? They spend their lives finding loopholes and things they can do to compromise applications out there, right? So your wallet, your software wallet is, you know, it's no different than, you know, well, there are differences, but in terms of people trying to compromise them, it's no different than Adobe or Microsoft Word or whatever, right? If you have any technical knowledge, there are definitely humongous differences there in terms of the attacks, right? But not when it, but the difference, there's no difference when it comes to, there's still that risk of something being compromised or vulnerable, right? So, you know, it's still sitting on a computer. You know, not even the wallet software itself, right? What if you have an email or you click something in social media that's a phishing attempt or social engineering you into something? Then they gain access to your system through some other application or software or script or something, and then they, you know, then they have access, then they can Now that they have access to your system, now they can gain access to your wallets. So there's a risk level there to consider as well. So I think I had another point to make and I lost it. But anyway, that's where hardware wallets come into play, right? We're all familiar with Trezor and Ledger. And you know, that is, I would say that just like Lithiason said, you know, having that hardware wallet is basically the definition of self-custody. Everything is sitting on that hardware wallet. That's as right now probably as secure as you can possibly get. You know, you only connect that hardware wallet for the moments that you are transacting or, you know, interacting with the blockchain using your wallet for whatever purpose it is. You know, and he said, you know, he said something about trust me, the hassle is totally worth it. So just to share that sentiment or that general thought, right? Like, I get it. At first, a lot of these things will seem like nuisances or hassles, or you know, there'll be headaches with them probably, right? When if there's a learning curve for you in using them, or just in general advancing your safety and security. But the truth of the matter, I mean, the fact is, like, as you're doing these things, the more that you do them, the more that they just become routine. They just become a part of your process, and it's, you know, it's almost like something you don't even, you know, you don't have to even actively think about anymore. It's just, you know, they're just normal steps for you to go through, and you'll get into a more routine, fluid motion. It doesn't take long. You know, you start using it, you figure out, you know, the best process that works for you, and by default, and then you'll just start following that. So don't be afraid of that. And if anybody needs any help ever around any of these topics, please reach out to me. I will help you. If not, I will find you the information to help you, or I'll find somebody to help you. That's what I'm here to do. Okay, so that's hardware wallets, software wallets, exchanges, which are zero self-custody wallets, right? You have no custody of them at all, basically. That's the first thing to do. Okay. Let me look through the list and just kind of get the next one I want to talk about. Okay, so SIM locking and two-factor authentication. So let's talk about SIM locking first. So the attack is called SIM swap, right? So what will happen is a bad actor will attempt, for example, will attempt to socially engineer your service provider. So, you know, I keep using examples of Verizon or AT&T, you know, or T-Mobile, something like that. What they'll do is call them or reach out to them and attempt to socially engineer them into activating their SIM with your phone number. You know, if they get through that social engineering attempt, service provider activates that SIM, and then now anything going to your number now is going to that bad actor. Yeah, that wasn't always a huge thing, but I feel like in the last couple of years it has started to pick up popularity, that type of attack, right? So, you know, let's see here. And we'll talk about two-factor authentication shortly. But basically, what they'll be able to do at that point, and just to be very clear, right? Not just, you know, more specifically about what they'll be receiving with that replacement SIM, is then they can start requesting OTP codes or one-time passcodes. Right. So if you have two-factor authentication set up and you're using a one-time passcode to do your second authentication to whatever application you're logging into, then they can get that, right? So if they've if they've gained your password and they st or yeah and or they get these OTP codes, then they can start accessing, whatever accounts you have, right? So let's jump to two-factor authentication next. So two-factor authentication, I think I've already kind of talked about it. It's simply put, right? So let's take an example. You log into abc.com with your username and password, and then with two-factor authentication enabled, what will happen at that point is then you'll get a push notification, or you'll have to go to an authenticator to then get that one-time passcode. You'll then go put that in after your password, and then that second authentication method will then allow you to log in. There are other authentication methods people use. Biometrics, right, is another popular one. But the couple of examples he gave would be, starting off with software two-factor authentication. Would be your Google Authenticator. I use Google Authenticator for a lot of things as well, and it's a very popular one to have. It's integrated with a lot of things out there and works pretty well. Another one is Authy, so Authy. If you look that up on Twitter, they have a Twitter page, or you can just go to Authy.com. And then a hardware wallet. That he recommended is called Yubico, YUBICO. They also have a Twitter page spelled just like that. You can go check them out and see if you want to look into hardware wallets or hardware two-factor authentication. But the point he was making there is two-factor authentication is great and a necessity. But if you don't have SIM locking enabled, then if they social engineer and get a replacement SIM, then they can get your two-factor authentication OTPs along with, that's a way to bypass, the 2FA security mechanism. So both of those things will help you. I know on Android, you can go to settings and security, and somewhere in there's a SIM lock option you can enable. I don't know where that is on the Apple device, iPhones. I don't use iPhone because of my fundamental disagreements with their business, but it is probably there's probably some sort of feature or mechanism like that on Apple as well. But anyway, on Android, you can go to settings and security and get that turned on. So that's that stuff. So far, we've talked about exchanges, software wallets, hardware wallets, SIM locking, two-factor authentication. I'm going to take a couple of minute break, and then we're going to talk about seed phrases and then password managers, which seed phrases we're probably all a lot more familiar with, but likely a lot of you are not familiar with password managers. So we'll talk about that one a little bit too. So take about 2 minutes here, and I'll be right back. Okay, it has been 2 minutes. So we'll go ahead and continue on the last 2 points here. And there'll be time left because these are open places for 1 hour at a time. So there's another thing I'll bring up at the end about protecting yourself on things like Discord and Telegram. So, seed phrases. Store them securely, simply put, right? Having your seed phrases, let's step back for a second. Let's talk about seed phrases versus passwords. Be very clear on what these are. Seed phrases are the, for a Cardano wallet, they're 24 randomly generated words. These words are your seed phrase. And it is your access to your wallet. With that seed phrase, that's what even gives you the initial access to the wallet, period, right? When you create the wallet, you get that seed phrase. That's how you restore that wallet or get access back to that wallet. If your computer crashes or blows up and you get another one, you get that wallet, you choose the option in any of the wallets to restore, and then you type in your seed phrase, and that gives you access back to your wallet again. Because your things, your assets are not stored in that wallet, they're stored on the blockchain. So the wallet is just referencing that information on the blockchain, right? So if you lose your computer, or I'm not, I hope you don't lose it, but if it, something happens to your computer and you don't have access to your wallet anymore, it's just a reference. So, all of your stuff is still on the blockchain. It's not gone anywhere. It's still there. You just need to use that seed phrase to get access back to that wallet again. Now, the password only comes into play when you're actually making a transaction. So you create or restore your wallet with your seed phrase. Then you go to send Nancy some ADA. Then when you say, "Hey, here's her address. Here's how much I'm sending," then you have to put in a password to actually sign that transaction, right? That's what you have there. That's what you're working with. But storing them securely. Let's see here. There's something I want to pull up before I get into that. Keeper. So there are metallic wallets. So don't ever store your seed phrase on your computer. Don't ever store your passwords on your computer, your usernames, none of that. Just don't ever store identifiable information on your system. So with that, for what you do with seed phrases is get a physical device where you can store that seed your seed phrases on. CryptKeeper wallet is a good example. I think that one is owned by Anthony. That's the one that Lutheson suggested, and that's the one I have as well. Basically, it's a metallic card. It comes with a little punch thing. You punch in your seed phrase. Then you take that device and you store it in your safe. It's fireproof, like all Mother Nature proof. It basically shouldn't get destroyed unless you try to destroy it. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's fireproof and all that. And you can lock it in a safe or whatever security mechanism you have at home. And that's the best way to store seed phrases. So, check out what other, there also not just CryptKeeper wallet, but if you buy one of those hardware wallets like Ledger or Trezor, I don't know if they still do it or if they have them in stock or not, but I think that they used to do a thing where if you bought one of their hardware wallets, you could also get or buy along with that a physical seed phrase metallic card that you could etch your punch your seed phrase into. So there are options out there, but again, maybe the hardware wallet provider does it, or CryptKeeper wallet. But always another point I want to make is always go to the source. if someone gives you a link to a third party selling these hardware wallets, for example, with a discount, don't do that. Just do not ignore the thought that you'll get a discount. Just don't even bother with that. Go to the source. I go to the source for everything every time. There are always potentials. There's always a possibility of something being malicious, compromised, etc., when you're buying from somebody else other than the source. There's been stories of that happening, I think, with the hardware wallets, right? But with anything, not just those, anything that you buy that could be used maliciously, but just go to the source, right? I keep repeating that, but it's very important to do that. Very important. Let's see. All right. Now we're going to talk about password managers, but first I'm going to take a drink. Hang tight. Okay. So password manager. I think right now I don't even know. I probably have 60, 70, 80 or more different accounts and passwords for things. All sorts of tools or applications in crypto or in the regular Web2 world. For my business, personal stuff. I think I have six or probably seven email accounts at this point that are all actively used, right? Just as an example. So we all have a lot of different accounts out there with passwords. It's extremely common that people use the exact same password for everything, or they'll think they're being safe or secure by taking that password and just slightly you're changing like one character in it for every different application. So, maybe they'll have ABC 123, then they'll change it to I don't know, ABC 321, right, or something like that. Thinking they're being secure and smart, and they're not. Because what will happen is if someone gets that pass, if someone gets your password, right, then they can extremely easily use that password to brute force all of your other passwords. It reduces the amount of options there are for the passwords to be, so then they can easily limit that and very quickly brute force all of your passwords, right? So you should always have complicated passwords and different passwords for everything that you have. But you're probably thinking, well, that's impossible because I can't remember all of those passwords, right? I could barely remember the same slightly changed passwords for all of my stuff. And that's true. But then you have what you call password managers. So what this is they store all of those complicated passwords for your accounts encrypted inside of the password manager. And then you have that one very complicated password for the password manager. And at that point, that's mainly the only one you need to remember on a routine basis. There's times where you need to update passwords and change them and rotate them, but on a daily routine basis, that'll be the one password you need to manage all of those passwords. So I highly suggest looking into those. And if you have any questions or need anything in that regard, let me or someone know. We'll help you out with that. You can he also suggested something that I've used in the past as well. So your passwords could also be stored in plain text and leaked out to bad actors. That's a very common thing. So what will happen is, people will get out there and gain information, like like, for instance, passwords, but they won't necessarily use them passwords for themselves. They'll go into the Tor, or they'll go into these dark websites, and they'll put them up for sale, and people will buy them, get them, and then they'll use them, right? So you could go to something called haveibeenpwned.com, and you can look up your stuff on there and see if anything's been compromised. I think Google does that as well. I think it is. I think I've seen that in my Google account before, where I can go in there and look at that, and they're always scanning. But there are a lot of different applications out there that you're using that you may not be aware of that are actively scanning for any possible compromised passwords that you have out there. I think a lot of banks are doing that now too, for example. But yeah, so there are a few different hardware wallets I would suggest. The first one would be LastPass. Lathisan mentioned that as well, and I agree with him. That would be my recommendation, using LastPass. One of their competitors would be KeePass. So LastPass or KeePass, check them out. I always tell people to take these suggestions and find out what works for you. So go watch YouTube videos on them, read articles on them, things like that, and try to figure out which one you think is going to be better for you to use, which one you feel safer using, all of that stuff, right? A few other options would be, one would be Bitwarden. I think Bitwarden is a free option, if I'm not mistaken. I don't use that one. I just know I've had people mention that one to me before. Two other ones I've heard mentioned when looking these up before as well would be 1Password or Dashlane. I'm even less familiar with those. But the point is, there are options out there. Do recommend LastPass or KeePass, but go look up options out there and see what works for you, paid or free, or based on functionality, all of that, right? Yeah, that's probably similar. I would say SIM locking, password managers, and then maybe 2FA are probably the least common things people are practicing out there or doing. Hardware wallets too. I bet a lot of you don't use hardware wallets. I get that they're a hassle, but like I said earlier, just use them at first, the first few days or week or 2 weeks or something. It'll probably be a hassle, right? But it's just with anything you do in life that you haven't done before, that's always a hassle at first, but then it becomes routine for you in nature. It's routine and second nature. It just becomes a part of your normal process. Okay. So I'm going to take another 2 minute break, and then I'll cover the other stuff that I didn't plan on talking about, but around, some basic things on Discord and Telegram. I'll be back in 2 minutes. Hello? Okay, let's see if I am. here. Yep, I switched over to my other account and was worried that it didn't continue, but it looks like it is continuing. That's great. There's just a delay in the text here I'm seeing. okay, let's talk about a couple of easy things to do to protect yourself on these social media things such as Telegram and Discord. There are a lot of other things out there to talk about, but I just want to mention something that someone asked me about the other day that I went walk through. First of all, get Telegram out of the way because that's probably the easiest. Don't use it unless you absolutely have to. I use it because I have acquaintances around the world that use it. I'm also, doing my Catalyst proposal project here. So I'm in multiple Telegrams for the purpose of communicating with people for that. But if you do use Telegram, keep it extremely limited only to what you ex necessarily need it for. I get messages on Telegram constantly for scams. People, I mean, they'll start out with just saying hello, then how are you? And then they'll ask you a question. They'll say, oh, and then they'll eventually, if you go far enough into the conversation, that what they're doing is socially engineering you. So if you get far enough into the conversation, then they'll say, oh, hey, can you give me your opinion on this thing? And it'll give you a link to click. And that link could be a phishing. It could be all, there could be all sorts of things that could occur with that. They could compromise your information in a myriad of ways by clicking that link, or they'll try to gain access to your wallets that way and so forth. So if anybody that you don't know tries to start a conversation with you on Telegram, probably just ignore it. If I ever do get a message on any social media that where I don't immediately know that person, I'll go to try to find out information about that person, and see, if I can find some information to build trust in that that person is actually who they say they are and a real person. Telegram, I'll look to see if they share Telegrams with me, or I'll go try to find them on Twitter, things like that. Yeah, that's Telegram. Don't use it, but if you need to, keep it very limited and probably never reply to people that DM you. Now, Discord. A lot of people complain about the security of Discord, and the challenges there, but I think that may just be lack of awareness, maybe. I'm not sure. But there are things you could do as a team and then as an individual. So first, as a team running a Discord server, some quick basic things you can do. There's certain bots out there, MeBot, or Me6, and then I'm forgetting some of the others. But basically, if you research it, you'll find the most common bots used on Discord servers in the crypto world to control accounts, to control spam, automate blocking people or kicking people. When one of the mistakes people make with Discord servers is when they're first building it, not building it right at first. Had knowing exactly how you're going to manage the administrator accounts, moderator accounts, how you're going to manage users, what you allow them to do or see or not do or not see, and doing all of that using the structure of channels in your Discord server that you want to use. All of that goes a long way. Then also like a captcha bot. If I go to join a Discord server and all I have to do is click one button to get authenticated to that Discord server, that reduces my confidence in their security immediately. Not that they are less secure because maybe they have a lot of other mechanisms that are already in there using different bots and so forth and configurations, but having that secure authentication to join a Discord is really important. Now for now for users. So I was asked about this the other day. So I, as an individual, follow certain steps to increase my safety using Discord. Let's take an example. If someone DMs me on Discord, a lot of times you'll get DMs on Discord that'll say, it'll be this big old blog of stuff that says, "Hey, you've won this prize," or, "Hey, join this investment channel. You can get free 0.5 Bitcoin." Obviously, all of that is an immediate, it's just immediate scam. You know that, right? So those are easy to ignore. But sometimes I'll get DMs in Discord that says, "Hey, Holy Macaroni, can you know, I have a question for you. Can you help me out with this thing?" And try to start a normal conversation as they're trying to socially engineer me, and they'll eventually get to a point to where they'll start their scam thing where they'll try to get me to go to something or give them something and so forth. But every time someone messages me on Discord that where I don't already know that person, here's what I do. The first thing is I look at their account. I say, does Discord identify them as a new Discord user? Right, and then what? Then, if it's new or not, I'll annotate that, and then I'll go to see if they share any Discord servers with me. I'm in an asinine amount of Discord channels in the crypto world, so if someone doesn't, the odds are if someone's messaging me, they should be sharing probably at least one server with me. It would be strike me very as very odd if they don't. So again, are they new to Discord? And do they share any Discord servers with me? The next thing I'll do is if I find them in a disc they're sharing a Discord server with me, I'll go to that Discord server and I'll search their name and I'll start seeing if they've said anything in that Discord server. I'll also see if they're new to that Discord server as well. So, are they new to that Discord server, and have they actually been saying things in there and having conversations with people, right? Building that confidence that that's a trustworthy person. So, I'll give an example. I was in an NFT, a Cardano NFT Discord. I will not name who they are because the creator is an absolutely wonderful person. I'm just not confident in their moderators. So, what happened was, I'll just call this person Bob, DM'd me, and started that thing where they were just trying to ask me stuff, or just start a conversation. I'm like, that's weird. I don't know who you are. So I did that thing. I clicked on their name. I saw that they are new to Discord, right? Already kind of, okay, that's interesting. So then I saw that they shared one Discord server with me, that NFT Discord. Okay, that's interesting. So if they're only in that one, why aren't they in other NFT Discords? Usually that's a thing. Anyway, I went to that Discord server. I searched Bob's name in there, and I saw that they had said nothing in there at all. That struck me very odd. So then I went to the channel in that NFT Discord where it shows new users that joined. I searched that person's name in there. I saw that they had just joined that Discord a few hours previous to that. So they are brand new to Discord. They're brand new to the NFT Discord. We're in no other NFT Discords and had never said anything in that chat. At that point, I knew that was the likelihood of that person being a bad actor was, growing quite a bit. Not that they had done anything bad. So that's in my field, that's called heuristic detections. Are you know not you know There are two different ways of identifying if like a file or URL or something is bad, right? The fact that it did something bad, right, is 100% sign, okay, that is bad. It did something bad. But then we need to be preventative as well. So we look at heuristics. Based on all the things we know, what is typical of a bad actor? Or a bad file or whatever. Well, all of these things. So, does it share characteristics of something that is bad? Not that it had done anything bad yet, but it does have these characters. And then that using those heuristics, we could say, all right, that's the likelihood is that could be bad. So we should probably block that, right? So using that mentality, I took that information to the Discord moderators and said, hey, these are the five things that I've correlated that to this person, heuristically showing that they're probably not good. Not that they aren't good, but the odds are they probably are not. I shared that with the moderators and they were looking into it and they said, well, this person hasn't actually done anything bad. And I went back and forth with them throughout the entire day into the next day, and I couldn't convince them. So then I did not feel secure in that Discord, and I left it. Yeah, and then I just didn't feel confident in the way that they are running and practicing security and safety for their users. So, I chose personally to leave that Discord. So that's an example of the process that I follow every single time that I get any message or anything at all from somebody. Even if it's somebody I'm like, oh, I know that person, I'll just double check. They didn't just obfuscate something a little bit to make it look like that other person. I'll still double check myself. But yeah, that is. I think that is it for this space. I know everybody is in Lithuania or whatever, Switzerland. And then there's Scott Fest today too. I did not even know about that. So that's going on in Scotland, I think, Edinburgh, and then the summit is all weekend. I will schedule these spaces. I'll have a new topic for next week, or I'll revisit some things. But anyway, I'll just have topics to talk about in these spaces and to share knowledge with people. But if somebody joins and wants to talk about something else, has other questions, we'll use that time to do that. Don't forget epochsec.io slash contact. You can go there and pick a time on my calendar to talk with me as well. I think that is it for now. I hope everybody has a good weekend. Take care.